Oh, well, it's always a pleasure. We sit down across the table from our good friend Ian Busby from Three Down Nation as the Stampeders finish off week nine with funny, eh, Buzz? Week nine, their first road win.
Yeah. You know what? I looked that up. This is the latest in the calendar they've had their first road win since 1984, when it was September 9th, also in Regina. Now, it's a weird part of the schedule. They had five home games before their third road game. So they lost their first two road games. Their third one, yeah, they're off the schneid. But it wasn't really that big.
No, it's kind of an optical illusion, isn't it?
Right. But this is a team that lost two road games last year.
Yeah.
So it's not a team that loses very often away from home. They've had the best road record over the past 5 years, I believe. Huff has always had a good road team, and it was because I think once he gets the team away from their home distractions, he gets them together and he's got a nice rigid schedule and he knows how to logistically play it out so that they're their best on the road.
Yeah, and in fairness, I mean, the one was an overtime loss in Ottawa.
Exactly.
That, you know, with a fumble, right?
Yeah. So it came down to one play, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so
the other, you know, they stumbled in Montreal, but that was a, you know, you're allowed to stumble once in a while. Yeah, but good to get that first road victory. And if people are going to say that this one wasn't that impressive because it was only a 3-point win over an 0-7 team, look at some of the games that the Riders have played. They've been in close games, and you know what? All that matters is you get in the victory. This isn't college football. There's no polling that matters. You know, they didn't look that good. Well, you know what? They got the victory.
Yeah, you know, let's table the Stamps just for a second because, you know, I loathe to be complimentary at all to the Riders, especially when they've yet to record a win this year.
Right.
But they are an anomaly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a team that should have. I'm not saying they should be a 500 team, but that's a team that likely should have a couple of W's under their belt. They're competitive in this game. They only lose by 3 points with their third string quarterback.
Right.
Their defense was particularly tough at times, especially in that second half. That's a real head scratcher, isn't it?
Well, and they're coming up on the most 4 points or less losses. They're probably going to tie it because they've already at six, I believe, out of eight games, 4 points or less losses. And then I think a few years ago, remember the Winnipeg Blue Bombers were doing this a few years
ago? That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the next year they were in the Grey Cup. So, you know, this type of stuff, there's some growing pains that go along with it. This isn't a young team, though. That's why it's such a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a young team on defense, especially for them to have such terrible success in close games. It's just, it's baffling, really. You know, one of these times the ball has to bounce their way, and it did. You know, they were down by a touchdown, and bang, they get a blocked punt, and suddenly they're back in the game, and it's nice and tied up, and it's like, well, maybe they're going to pull this one out, and then no, they just lose it at the end. They need a stop when the Stamps back the Stamps up to a second and 24, and then they take a stupid penalty, and you know, it just all unravels like that.
But what do you pull the pin though? Because it seems to me that if it keeps happening, somebody figuratively has to pay a price in this, right? And we know that if it is the coach who goes, somebody's going to walk in, and they're not taking over a rebuild, right?
No, and if you look at next year, you're going to come back with, you know, theoretically, Darian Durant will be fully healthy. And
with 2 years of rest.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. Now he's really, you know, can he bounce back?
Yeah.
It'll be a situation like Travis Lule after such a long time of struggling through injury. Now, can he come back to full capacity? I would say yes, because it's an Achilles injury for a quarterback. It shouldn't be that bad. You know, other guys have come back at other positions from Achilles injuries and been fine.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not as great as they were, but he doesn't have to be as mobile. But, you know, Darian Durant, part of what he does is mobility and toughness. And if he's back to 100% next year, they're going to be just as much of a contender as you would have expected coming into this season.
Yeah, yeah. Ian Busby from Three Down Nation. Anyway, we don't need to bog down on the Riders. There's enough people that pay attention to that team. They'll be okay.
They'll get covered.
The Stamps, couple things. One, and I know you and I have talked about this almost every week, but I continue to be impressed by this team's ability to nurse a lead late in a ball game. Yeah. And that, I think, is just experience, winning, all of those things. That's how it manifests itself.
Yeah. And the second half, and what was strange about, you know, the Stamps running game started to get better and better as the game went on, and their offensive line was exerting their will. And it felt like, wow, this is interesting. I thought this is what the Riders would have done.
Right.
With Jerome Messam coming out of the gates, just running it all over the Stamps, and he's a hard guy to bring down. If he gets ahead of steam, he's got 8 yards. And he was showing that. And then they just stopped going to him. And, you know, a couple of two and outs, then suddenly the Riders go away from their game plan. The Stamps start to implement theirs. And then the last 3 minutes, when they get the ball, you know, in their own zone, and they just run it right up to midfield and run the clock right down to zero. That was impressive. And, you know, the second and 14, you know, you think, okay, this is one, you know, the Riders are just going to clamp down. They know they have to rush the ball, you know, just to try and kill it out. And Torrey Harrison manages to find a seam and go in there and win the game. It's impressive. And what they've done, you know, Torrey Harrison gets the winning touchdown as well.
Yep.
You know, a little bit of a yin and yang with him and Matt Walter, and Walter goes over 100 yards and really took a beating in this game. He sprained his ankle early, played right through it. He was all wrapped up yesterday, and then he took a chunk out of his shoulder, which was, I asked him, when did it happen? He goes, I don't know. I got into the locker room and they said, your shoulder's bleeding. Look back and there was trickling blood. He says, I've lost a chunk of flesh somewhere along the line, but that's what you do when you're running hard yards like that. That's what's going to happen.
Is Matt Walter, because this is John Cornish's team, and because he's a Canadian running back, does he necessarily get the attention that he deserves? I mean, I know it's not a lot of 100-plus games, but it's his second of his career. It's 2 years now with John Cornish being injured, and he's come in and on the road. Because I think, wasn't his big game last year up in Edmonton too?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Maybe. I have to look that
up. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, he's shown up at times when this team's need him, and on the road, he's been a very good, solid warrior.
Yeah, and he's been, you know, and he had the injury last year that kept him out for a few weeks, too.
So, true.
You know, I think Matt Walter benefited from having John Cornish. When John Cornish first got here, it was, you know, Joffrey Reynolds running every down, and because there was the reluctance to put a Canadian in, then he didn't get that many, you know, it wasn't until his third or fourth year that he started getting just a little bit of action.
Yeah.
Now Matt Walter comes in, and because John Cornish has, you know, done what he's done, then you don't have that discrimination against Canadian running backs. And you say, well, Matt Walter, hey, he can go in there for a little bit here and there. And then John Cornish goes down with an injury, and Joffrey Reynolds never went down with an injury.
No,
so it was
no.
weird.
Yeah.
We never got to see what would happen. What would have happened back then? I don't know.
Yeah.
They never had to come up with that scenario. Matt Walter now, when John Cornish gets injured, you go, okay, Matt can hold the fort down. You know, he's good enough to get in there. And, you know, and this was his season high in carries, 19, which is good to show, but that means that the running game was effective and it was burning up the clock and they were sustaining drives. And that's what you mean. Wally Bono, I remember quizzing him, you know, a few years ago. It wasn't necessarily just me, but some of the other media, well, do you need to give your running back the ball more? And he goes, well, we will once they start working it well. Well, you know, it's a catch 22, right?
Yeah.
If your running game isn't going well, you can't sustain drives to get more carries because you're going two and out and you're punting the ball away. So for the running game to get that much work, it means that it was effective.
Couple things in this game, Ian, that I want to touch on. One, the hit on Brown led to this disqualification. Football is an interesting game. It's a collision sport. It's played by real tough men, and they deserve that respect. And very interesting to watch. The play itself is not pretty to watch at all.
Right.
But the fallout of it, TSN's cameras did a nice job of following him off the field and all the players coming up and congratulating him and everything. It really had that feel of, you know, something grand, that something important happened. Then you go and then you watch it and you go, no, that's, he's out. He's gone.
Yeah.
And
they made the right call.
No, they did, but there's kind of that yin and yang of football, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, and it's because it felt like the entire stadium is trying to find something to hang there. You know, they want to get excited about something. And when it comes down like that and you instantly, when you see it in fast motion and live action, it looks big and you go, oh, wow, that's a big hit. But then when you slow it down and you go, wow, that's just really dangerous to go up that high on somebody that's coming full speed at you. It was a full speed collision.
Yeah.
So after that, and just thankful that Tim Brown got up and he was fine and he just has some aches and pains and he's going to be fine and everything. When you, and you look at the reaction, was like, I don't know how he was that shocked after what, you know, maybe he didn't, you know, just adrenaline took over. He didn't realize how bad it looked and how nasty that hit was. But, you know, it was so reminiscent of John Cornish's hit last year. And, you know, this one wasn't straight on. It was not straight
to the one again, the one versus Montreal that knocked him out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so Cornish's one for came from the side, which was much more dangerous because it twisted his head and his neck.
Right.
And then he hit the ground and he was out. You know, Tim Brown, at least, you know, the impact of it didn't wasn't that damaging, but it still felt like the same thing where it was just scary to see. And they set the precedent now that they're not going to suspend anybody for it because Kyrie Zabert didn't get suspended.
That's right.
And this one isn't worse than Kyrie Zabert hit, but it's still not fun to see.
No, it isn't. And that was a nasty game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a nasty.
Well, and whenever these two teams get together, and I think it comes from Corey Chamberlain's history with the Stamps and how he sets the, and you know, the 2013, that rivalry really took off,
right?
You know, between those two teams, you know, in the same coaching staffs and stuff like that. It, you know, that they get up for these games and both sides are, you know, they're raring to go when it's Saskatchewan, Calgary. One more of those Halloween night.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it'll be a good one.
And the Stamps are coming off a bye, so I think I know who I like in that one.
The play calling at the end of the half to go for it.
Huh.
Eric Rogers goes up and beat, what, 9 defenders? 5 defenders? I don't know, but he beat a lot of green jerseys there. I like that kind of play calling. That's Dave Dickinson, right?
Yeah, that it was Dave, and he was all up in that. And he's done it. This isn't the first time we saw it. You know, 2009 with Taylor. Was it 2008?
I thought there was one with Montreal,
with Tao, right? Teo Johnson. Yeah, Teo Johnson, 2008.
Yeah, yeah.
And Teo Johnson was he was 6'5 and 240 and a former basketball player. And all he did was, you know, box guys out with his butt and then jump up and take it. It was like catching a rebound. but then 2011, I remember Nick Lewis gets one.
That's
it,
right.
I think it was a tip.
Yeah.
Tip back to him.
Yeah.
He takes it in. He bowls his way into the end zone. That was a great play. The curious play call of the whole thing was the 65-yard field goal attempt. I know it was a really strong wind, but the Riders thinking that they could actually make something happen out of that. Tim Brown caught that on about the 7 or 8 yard line.
Yeah.
And brought it out to midfield and then gets
his head taken off.
Gets the extra 25 yards. But that was the weird thing. It was like, well, if they're going to try something crazy like that, well.
But that's very Chris Jones-like. That's not necessarily Chamberlain's rep, is it?
It was kind of desperation mode there.
Yeah.
And obviously, I think what maybe they had in mind that where they were on the field, they were going to try a field goal here.
Yeah.
And then they got pushed back and they were hoping it was going to be a 55-yarder, not a 65-yarder. But that would have been the longest field goal in CFL's history. Paul McCallum has the record at 63.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. It was history making. There's no doubt about it. Ian Busby from Third Down Nation, our guest. The Stamps going to take on Winnipeg, which leads me, thanks to Will, our producer. Just go back to Matt Walter. His previous 100-plus yard game was against the Blue Bombers on November 1st. It was not against the Eskimos, as I blurted out.
Oh, okay.
We got that technically fixed.
And the Blue Bombers over the past couple of years were not so much this season, but the previous couple of years were a very easy team to run on. Gary Etcheverry's defense last year was, now I'm not discounting what Matt Walter did, but that was the game plan against Winnipeg. You could run on them.
So is Jasper Simmons the key in this game, or is he the kind of the sidebar in this game? Because that was, you know, obviously the news of last week and the fallout of that. Now he's a member of the Bombers. He already had his chance, doesn't regret a thing, won't take anything back. Does he become the focal point for this game?
Well, I would suspect not, because there's a chance that he might not even play. is that funny? And here's the irony of, had he been on the roster last week, he would have been activated because Glenn Love got hurt for the Stamps.
Yeah.
He would have been in there.
Yeah.
And he would have, you know, Maliki Harris had a couple of series for the Stamps, and I thought he made a pretty good play dropping a guy before a first down. He would have been in there. That's the irony. And now, so he skipped out on the Stamps, got himself out of town, missed out on that game check, might not play this week, so he might collect a practice roster check, and then it's all about his opportunity, but they're guaranteeing him nothing. And that was the stories that came out of Winnipeg yesterday. First time, obviously, he goes to Winnipeg. This is his first meeting with the media there. Yeah, he says he regrets nothing. Nobody knows exactly what was said between him and Huff. You know,
sure.
Painted it kind of a different picture of what Huff had said, but I don't believe that Huff is making anything up about what he said.
Why would he have to with a player like this? Right?
Yeah. And then now Mike O'Shea says, well, he's here to compete for a job on special teams. saying nothing about linebacker, which is what he wants to play defense. He doesn't want to play special teams. It seems like that's the case anyway. And if he's just competing for a job on special teams, how is he going to be in a different situation than what he was in Calgary? Because they got good linebacking crew.
Yeah.
And they're talking about, well, he might replace Sam Hurrell at middle linebacker. Well, then that's a ratio change. Now, I know Winnipeg's going through one on their offensive line right now. They're going to put in Pat Neufeld at right tackle. But still, you know, you're juggling the roster to make this guy happy. Is that really going to happen? We'll see how this plays out. The interesting thing is once a guy does it once, who says he won't do it?
Well, he's got a reputation there, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, just two more before I let you go. Both kind of, I guess, kind of league-wide questions in this one. Tom Higgins.
Yeah.
I like Tom. I covered him a little bit when I was up in Edmonton early on in my career, but I got to know him here in Calgary. Always liked him. He strikes me as being a little bit of an outlier as far as CFL coaches go because he's somewhat approachable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, very much. And one of the things. So it's funny. I was looking back at 2007 about some stories that I was, you know, I was just looking back at 2007 stuff. And it was, Jim Popp is taking over midseason coaching staff wise. Tom Higgins is about to be fired. Man, it felt like there's cyclical things in the CFL.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom, he's a great builder of a franchise, and he obviously built a good franchise there. He helped build a team there in Edmonton that won a couple great cups, and one that after he had already left, and then in Calgary helped turn that team around from 4-14. They were 11-7 the next year in 2005, and he just doesn't.
Is he ruthless enough, Ian?
He's probably not.
And is that the right word?
Well, it's a quality throw.
All of these have negative connotations,
he got a Ned Flanders reputation in Edmonton, but he's not really like that. Like he just doesn't get the sort of respect from the management that he deserves.
No.
And it seems like this issue in Montreal was Jim Popp seemed to me like he wanted to be the head coach.
Yes, he did.
And they... You know, the owner, Bob Wetenhall, probably said, no, I want you to hire a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't really come up with great options. And then Wetenhall went out and hired Tom Higgins on his own.
Right.
And so he wasn't Jim Popp's choice. So you knew the first stumble they had, he was going to try and get rid of him. Now, they didn't do it last year when he was 1-7. They stuck with it. They made the playoffs, hosted a playoff game. I thought they're still on the rise. They lost a couple of close games here.
Yep.
And, you know, that game here against the... Calgary could have went either way. You know, and just they're close. They're in that mix of teams that are, you know, not great, but, you know, that could still do something in the playoffs. And then for them to change it after this big emotional victory in Vancouver, they hadn't won there for a longest time. They have won in BC Place forever. They won once in Empire Stadium, but it just felt like maybe it came down to, and what I'm reading now into it is, John Bowman was sat for a couple of games, and it seemed to be the, you know, sort of a being pushed aside. And now Jim Popp's back in. John Bowman is up in the first defense right now. It could have been just personnel clashes.
Yep.
And if Jim Popp was never keen on him at any point, maybe he just went to Wetenhall and said,
well, Wetenhall hired him, right? Because Jim Popp applied for the coaching job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he kept him out of the coaching job loop because he was a candidate. And now he says, well, we can't work together anymore. You know, Jim Popp has a long standing relationship there in Montreal. Mm. Now, done some great things, obviously, but he had Anthony Calvillo for a lot of years too. So
that doesn't hurt.
No. And as a coach, he's never been that successful.
Yeah.
So we'll see where this goes, but it's not as positive. I think I predicted Montreal would be in the Grey Cup on this show or this station.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have to stand by that now, but I will if I have to.
No, no.
Because one thing I want to point out is when a team fires Tom Higgins as head coach, they win the Grey Cup the following year.
But not in the year. We don't know.
We don't know. It could be.
Yeah.
You know,
that's right.
Now, they could fire him after the East Final and see if they could win the Grey Cup because of making that change.
Right.
Yeah. Because 2008, Stamps, a year after firing Higgins, won the Grey Cup. In 2005, a year after firing Tom Higgins, Edmonton wins the Grey Cup.
Well, and that's where I kind of want to end. You talk about Montreal in the East and Edmonton and everything. Hamilton laid the boots to the Eskimos this past week in Commonwealth Stadium. Does that take a little luster off of what Labor Day was beginning to look like?
Probably not, because I think in the standings portion now, if Toronto goes in this week and lays the boots to Edmonton, then we're going to see, because then they might be two games back.
Yeah.
Right now they're a game back of Calgary, but it's still, that's still going to be pivotal. But remember last year, it really, that was a real statement when Calgary won those two games. And then in the playoffs, it was, you haven't beaten them all year. Well, it doesn't matter. You know, Calgary hadn't beaten BC all year and in 2008 and they came in and, you know, they still beat them. So who knows? But I say Labor Day is going to be, that series is still going to be the pivotal matchup in the West. Obviously, if you look at the standings, it definitely will be.